It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
What in the world is happening on Wall Street?
Economic indicators.
Who knows where this is going to end up?
To understand the economy, you have to understand human nature.
This podcast is powered by Acast.
How are you doing there? It is St. Patrick's Week, John.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to the podcast. You know the score, we're trying to make economics, finance, that little bit more comprehensible, that little bit more digestible, and trying to shine a light on things. This week, we're going to be talking to former US regulator, banking regulator and finance regulator, who investigated the savings and loans scandal, which was a late 80s, early 90s banking scandal in the United States. Professor Bill Black, we're going to talk to him later about what's going on at Davies. How are you, Ed?
I am very good.
What's rocking your world? How was your week?
The week was, it's a funny old week, but do you know what?
Tell me what.
I watched a bunch of docos this week. I think I told you about...
Well, John, can I just interrupt you? At your insistence, I watched Harry and Meghan the other night. And not at your assistance, but I assume you were both watching Britney.
Britney was fantastic.
Who Framed Britney?
Yeah. And do you know what? I came out with two thoughts. Like, it's one of those kind of guilty pleasures. Britney Spears always had a great voice, but the production of her tracks were fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. But watching that, the doco on her, I felt so sorry for her. It was a waste of talent. Like she
was amazing talent.
She was amazing. She sold millions of records and all the rest. But at what cost? To her.
To herself, yeah. No, it was actually, by the way, if you haven't seen it, look at it. It's a, I think it's a New York Times Investigates doco, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was actually, yeah.
I'll tell you my Britney story though.
Oh, go on.
Lucy, my daughter, was born in 2000, right? Mm-hmm. During the peak of Britney mania. She's born in Belfast, right? In May.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, God. June, May, whatever. Right.
Are you sure that was the year?
Yeah. Kind of. And so, you know the way names have such resonance, what you're going to call, because it sends out so many signals, right? About status and society and whatever. My mother rings me a few hours after Lucy's born. And she, at this stage, has no name. My mother says, what are you going to call her? Yeah. I said, Britney. It was just a silence on the other end.
It was like, do you remember Neighbours was a really popular show?
I do.
And there was loads of people around Ireland called Kylie and Jason.
I know.
I remember the name charts.
Well, actually, the name charts are very interesting because everybody decides, what is really fascinating, there's a lot of economic study about naming.
Mm.
And herd behavior, right?
Yeah.
So, for example, right? Again, so we named Lucy.
Yeah.
And in 2000, we thought there were no Lucys because you always would have a special name for your thing. What's in the top 10 names now? Yeah. Lucy. Everybody was thinking the same thing at the same time.
It's weird because we actually had the same experience with Ruby, which I thought, hey, that's kind of...
Ain't no rubies around.
Yeah. And there's loads of rubies around.
Yeah.
And Isabel. There's loads of Izzy's around.
Yeah.
But you think you're being, no, we have this nailed.
Yeah.
This really suits her and it's unique and it's not unique at all.
We should have gone for Britney. We should have gone for Britney. And I was watching Harry and Meghan at your insistence, John.
Oh, wasn't that good?
Oh, you got to love Oprah's hair. I was loving the look of Oprah. It was outrageous. And the purple eyeshadow and the whole thing and the glass. It was mad stuff.
But as Sheena summed it up, was it was two millionaires being interviewed by a billionaire in some other billionaire's garden.
Gaff, yeah, exactly. Like
halfway through, I was fascinated by it all. You know,
and it is just fascinating. But
purely from a voyeuristic kind of way.
Yeah.
But like at the end of the day, you're kind of going, God, this is such first world problems. Like,
really is. It really, really, really is. But you know, the funny thing is, John, you say you're not going to do this. You say, oh, I'm going to read an economics book tonight. But in actual fact,
I don't think I've ever said that, actually.
Okay, that's my weirdness, right? But I've, you know what I mean? Like, but just give me a bit of celebrity telly. Just
to veg out.
Come here, you know, particularly in the lockdown. You know, as I was saying today, I can't wait till the bar's open so I stop being an alcoholic.
That's so true.
It's true. Give me an open bar, please. So I'll stop drinking so much. John, I think we've got to go down to the west, lower again, because it's all kicking off.
Whoa. Tarquin has arrived again.
Oh, Tarquin. I told you, Tarquin. Tarquin is now, he's in his red trousers, right?
Yeah.
He's got the velvet collar. He's now working for Rothschild's bank. Because Rothschild, remember we said it always happens in Ireland, right? When there's a gig done and the Irish are trying to keep the nasty little business to themselves, they always employ a posh Brit to kind of sprinkle posh Brit dust on the whole thing, right? And it's always a Tarquin.
Just to make it right.
Just to make it right. And now Davies, which we're going to talk about in a minute,
yeah,
has employed Rothschild's British bank, with many Tarquins, I suspect,
yeah,
to ensure that Davies is sold. So let's go down. Let's go to the west, okay?
Yeah.
2 points there.
Actually, Tarquin has brought his mate, Nigel.
Ooh, yes.
I think he's carrying the card. So let's hit Nigel.
Nigel's one of those, you know, loves to talk about cars. Another type of fella.
Yeah, you get
that chap. Okay. But so you've got Mick, Tony, Pat, Barry, and Eugene. Yeah. Eugene is a new player, right?
Oh, yeah.
And they're down there and they're trying to sell Davies. Now, they realise that what we're trying to do is trying to make sure that whoever we sell Davies to, we can actually shut down any investigation into Davies. Right? That's crucial.
Yeah.
So what we're going to do, we're going to sit around there and we're going to pretend it's an open discussion and it's an open bid. So we're going to pretend there's interest from other Irish players and international players. But actually what we want to do is we want to sell it to...
Keep it close, yeah.
So whatever dirty stuff is going on, we basically we say, Tarquin, just make sure it's amongst the lads. All right. There's Johnny Sexton. Now, let us leave the West Lower. By the way, if the West Lower is a part of the Aviva Stadium, as I said, not the Irish Celtic goddess of fertility, but an English insurance company. And it is where deals are done at rugby matches. You'll see them. It is an infestation of collars up, sheepskin coats, and hip flasks.
Point to Hino!
2 points of Hino! This is where deals are done. Watch this space. We're going to go to the States now. And you know what we're going to talk to? We're going to talk to the most formidable bank regulator for many, many decades. Professor Bill Black was the man who put not one, but many white-collar criminals behind bars in the States prosecuting cases associated with what was called the savings and loans scandal.
Clinton was involved in that, wasn't he?
No. Now, that's interesting. Do you know the fake news about Clinton?
Go on.
The fake news about Clinton, an associate of Clinton committed suicide, whose name escapes me. And all the fake news was put on that the Clintons were involved in his murder.
Yeah.
And there was a property deal underlying that, which was associated with the savings and loans in our councils. But it was the same thing, savings and loans crisis, massive scandal. Basically what happened was, not unlike what we're seeing here, is, and Bill wrote a great book. We're going to talk, do you know the title is? The easiest way to rob a bank is to run it. Because banks get robbed from the inside out.
So tell us about the savings and loans.
Savings and loans were small banks, savings and loans banks in the United States, right? Mm. So basically, you know, what you have in the States, you have this huge, huge, big, what they call bulge bracket banks, right? But then you've got these small savings and loans, like local banks. And what they figured out, the people figured out, is that if you run savings and loans, right, what you can do, you as the chief executive, if you are corrupt, and if you fancy it, you can take a position in other stocks, right, on behalf of the bank, right? So what happens, the savings and loans bank would buy something else, but in advance, the shareholders of the savings and loans, the management would take a stake in the bank they were buying. So they were enriching themselves all the time. Exactly what's happening in Davies.
Oh, okay.
You take a stake in the trade and therefore you
unbeknownst to their clients.
Unbeknownst to their clients because their clients are punters.
Right.
So they turned savings and loans banks into personal enriching vehicles for themselves. And Bill was the US regulator who unraveled the whole thing.
And he put a few of them behind bars.
Dozens of them behind bars. Because that's what the Americans do.
Yeah, there's no messing around. It's
no
just,
messing around. Yeah. It's done. Let's go and talk to Bill Black and get his take. If he were invited in by the Irish state to investigate Davies, what would he do? Bill, good morning to you.
Good morning.
What do you make? Okay, I'm going to ask you the question. If you were brought in as a special investigator into Davies Stockbrokers that you're appraised of what's going on there, what would you do? What were the first few things you'd do?
If I were a financial regulator and investigator, which is what I was back in the day, what we would be doing is immediately getting an emergency cease and desist order to remove the senior management's ability to do anything, right? So here, virtually the entire leadership team was personally involved in the frauds. And they were defrauding clients in a way that both indicates they can't be trusted to run the place and that they're creating liabilities for the place as well.
So the first thing is you suspend them. Second thing, what do you do? You know, how do you investigate these things when you go in there? Because I'll tell you, a lot of people listening to the show, Bill, will be reading the local press. They'll be getting snippets of rumor and gossip. And what's coming out is, the first thing that's coming out is the regulator and the central bank said, although this was unethical and shameful and whatever, no crime was committed.
Yeah, the regulator said that, which is kind of interesting because, you know, they're not the prosecutors. So in the United States system, we as regulators file suspicious activity reports, commonly called criminal referrals. And that's our job, right? And then if we make a case, we only have civil authority. So we establish fraud as a matter of essentially common law, which is probably very common with Ireland and the UK and such. So your audience understands.
The same legal system, more or less.
Right. And this is fraud, right? You are deceiving your customer to take something of value from the customer and have it to go to you instead. And it's not only fraud, it's fraud in a fiduciary context, right? Where you've gone to professionals who you're going for independence and skills and ethics, right? And they instead are saying, another sucker through the door type of thing. Okay, so that's the mindset of what we would do. Now, we sure as heck wouldn't take 6.5 years and then ourselves.
Okay, Bill, I take it that you think this is sort of a little unusual country.
Well, no, I'm not. I'm just getting started and then pat ourselves on the back for this supposedly brilliant thing that we've done and then say, by the way, the management was obstructive every inch of the way, and therefore we didn't remove them.
Let's get to the okay. So let's keep going.
And we didn't make a criminal referral. We just decided on ourselves. Oh, this couldn't be a crime because it's only fraud.
Okay,
in most countries, it's a fraud.
It's a crime. Okay, so let's keep going. When you see an organization like this, and you see the leadership at the top, and you see what they've done, and you see, you know, what do you think else is going on?
lots of bad things because there is no concept being followed of a fiduciary. And financial institutions vary as to the type of transaction and the nature of the fiduciary duty. But overall, we think of them as they're supposed to be fiduciaries, and they're sure as hell supposed to be fiduciaries in terms of their treatment of customers.
By fiduciaries, you mean exactly what?
So a fiduciary is someone that has special expertise, professionalism, and owes duties of good faith and duties of good care.
Okay.
Right? So that's common law that we share with the Irish and the Brits from many centuries back, right?
Okay.
And it has worked really well when finance has worked really well. And when you violate it, finance works really, really, really badly.
I hear you. So this is an absolutely essential pillar of everything.
Right. If I see people in senior ranks breaching fiduciary duties, particularly of loyalty, right? Care, they can just be morons. And then I want them out, right? Because they're morons. But the violate the fiduciary duty of loyalty means to deliberately screw the customer to benefit yourself. You, I can't trust as to anything. I don't trust anything you tell me. I don't trust that the documents you give me are real. I don't trust that your accounting records are real. So I go in with a completely different mindset at that point because I know you're liars, I know you're cheats, and I know that I cannot risk leaving you in control of the largest Irish financial institution of its kind and oldest, right? And one that was the only, I gather, Irish firm that was actually, you know, working for the government.
Absolutely, yeah, in being a primary broker of Irish
and guilt. Not just a primary broker, your Department of Justice has hundreds of millions of euros with these clowns. You have your Justice Department with the crooks.
I did not know this. Okay. See that? Okay. So let's keep digging.
That's insane. Does everybody get this? You can't be polite. This isn't, this is frigging insane. This is an emergency. It goes to the top of my list. And I do not rest until these people no longer control the institution and can no longer cause additional problem. So in the United States context, we can go for an emergency cease and desist order, and we can get emergency suspensions potentially. And this wasn't found by the regulators. This was on a silver plate because the customer figured it out and the customer sued and the customer established much of what was gone wrong. And even today in Ireland, they're hiding the names. The regulators won't make public the names of the people that committed the frauds.
Okay, Bill, I can see. This is what I find amazing. Is that you as a regulator, you know what's going on. You've got the information from Google and a few, you know, the newspapers, right? You can see exactly what's going on. And what you're saying is the regulator can see exactly what's going on and more, and is still sort of defending the integrity of an institution that, as you said, has no integrity.
Not just the regulators. You have Irish journalists calling this a rogue action. By 16 of the most senior people in the organization. That's not a rogue operation. That's the frigging crew and the management team, right? Running the place are crooks. And, you know, with a motto that says, me first, maybe the company second, and the customer, you know, that's Michael Lewis's point. This was known as, and I quote, blowing up the customer.
Yes, and that's the other great expression.
That is not good. You don't want people in charge of financial institutions who blow up the customer.
By the way, guys, just so you know, the book that Bill is referring to is called Liar's Poker, which was Michael Lewis's first book. Michael Lewis was a bond trader at Solomon's. Just so you, I'll give you a bit of context. written in the late 80s, I believe, before Lewis realized, you know, I'm pretty good at this writing stuff. And he embarked on a different career. But a very good book. Anybody wants to understand the ins and outs and the madness of trading floors, it's well worth it. Okay, Bill, let's keep going. So you go in, and what next do you look for?
Well, here I've already got a huge advantage. If I assume I'm an Irish regulator, I never cottoned to this until there's a civil suit. Right? And so as soon as I hear is the civil suit, I go in and get all the information from the plaintiff,
yes,
right? Who has all kind? It's like giving, six legs up,
yep,
in an investigation in those circumstances. But you find these things not by reading the newspaper and finding out there's been civil litigation. As financial regulators, we examine the institution.
Okay.
We send people in to look for these kinds of things. And this place was notorious. It has a track record for decades of ripping off customers. So your very first suspicion.
Yeah, there was the Green Court. Again, what Bill is referring to is a Green Court case, 1993. Very similar type of structure involved, very similar operation. And actual fact, some of the same individuals involved in it. That's 93. That's a long time ago. That's a long time ago. That's a long time ago.
Irish papers.
Yeah. Okay. So let's keep going. What I want to do is, how do you unravel an institution like this? If you're going in thinking, okay, something is rotten at the top here, right? What do you do to get to the bottom of it? Explain that to me and the listeners.
In the U.S. context, we have a right to go into the institution and look at any record,
okay,
through our examination process. So that's what we do first.
And what would you as a regulator be looking for? Like, give me the red flag. What would you say? Oh, seen that now? That's a red flag to me.
Well, anytime they have side deals going on among the partners, that's and something you look at immediately as a high priority. And this one would have been, so many red flags, you would have thought you were in Moscow at May Day when you looked at the
Okay. And if you look at the corporate structure of Davies, there's a hell of a lot of offshore companies. What's that all about?
So, yes, what we look for as fraud investigators is unnecessary complexity.
Okay, that's interesting. Okay,
unnecessary complexity is always it's expensive.
Yes.
To obscure things. And, all these places claim to be transparent. So that's where they're hiding things. So
okay. If
they're hiding, we're looking.
Okay.
And we're looking really intensively. And again, we can demand in the U.S. context, I don't care that you've hidden it in the Cayman, you will bring it to Erie, right? You will bring it to Dublin.
Okay.
And you will bring it within the next 48 hours.
That's right? What you say to them as investigator stroke regulator.
Well, no, in the U.S. context, it's rarely there, and we simply physically go and we just show up, right? And we say, we want the following things, and we want someone who can explain your filing system. And then we get a bunch of people lower in the organization whose job is, making things run correctly. Now, those folks, chief risk officers, compliance people and such, in scams like this, are kicked to the side. And lo and behold, that's what the banking regulators said. They didn't tell the compliance people. Well, gosh, what? Why would they not tell compliance people? Oh, I know, because they were trying to hide a fraud.
Okay.
And they knew it was a fraud. That is in English, Irish, U.S. parlance, that's consciousness of guilt. Bing, 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 bing.
Okay.
That's how you establish that Latin phrase, mens rea, the bad intent, right? So fraud is an intentional crime. You have to intend. Now, this reeks of intent, right? They did all kinds of things to set it up, and then they hid it from the compliance people, and all of those things would establish intent.
When you're looking at an institution and you get something like this, in your experience, it's rarely a one-off event, would you say?
No, especially if it's coming from the top.
Okay.
Right.
So it's not like a Barings, your man, Nick Leeson, sort of rogue trader, 27-year-old guy, freaks out, does all sorts of things, right? This is coming from the...
No, but Nick Leeson, by the way, is like the exception that proves the rule. So the grave danger always comes from the top, except where somebody allows a middle-level person like Nick Leeson to be totally in charge of both the front and the back office.
Yeah, I hear you. Right? I hear you.
And where the Far East part of Barings thought that, you know, a different subset of the bank was monitoring him.
Yeah, people didn't know what was going on.
Versa.
Yeah. Okay, so let's
and
get
no
back
no one was actually monitoring.
Let's get back to our little thing, right? At the moment, this institution, the reaction in Ireland has been to put it up for sale. You laugh.
Yeah.
That's John giggling in the back.
We are taught as economists, right, that reputation is the trump card.
Sure.
That makes everything in economics and finance and business work. And surely no one would want to acquire a place that had a terrible reputation. And the internal folks that have been quoted in the Irish papers use obscenities to describe what kind of operation it was. So tell me, why does the second largest bank in Ireland want to acquire a place filled with people who were hired by the most unethical people you can imagine?
Why do you think? What flag?
I'm afraid that's exactly what they want.
Okay. So the large bank, which is rumored to be in negotiations to take over Davies, what's it doing?
Well, it's doing something that supposedly doesn't happen in economics. It's saying, who could we buy that has a terrible, terrible, terrible reputation that almost certainly has, given the incredible ineptness of the Irish regulatory system, an enormous number of skeletons that haven't been found that are going to embarrass us and cost us, and is filled with people who were picked and mentored through their entire careers by people who defrauded their clients.
So I want to conclude here. What would you do now? You said you'd go in and cease and desist. You said you'd go in and say, look, hold on a second, nobody's selling anything to anyone until we know what the hell has gone on here. How do you think this ends? How does this end in America? And then we'll see how it might end in Ireland.
In America, if it were a bank, which is different, right? I was a banking regulator. We would put it into conservatorship and we would do the sale and we would bring suits against all the people for the proceeds, and we would seek punitive damages and we would seize their assets. That's what we do. That's what I did as litigation director and as enforcement director.
Let's see what happens here.
Oh, and I'd make a criminal referral too, a whole series of criminal referrals.
Bill Black, as always, thank you very much.
Life is full of what ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you. A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times.
Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Bill fairly nailed it there, John.
He sure did. And you know what? I was getting riled, more and more riled as he was talking there about, you know, we slag off the, jokingly, the West Lower and stuff. But this is how Ireland works.
Yeah,
you know?
It is. And it's funny, you know, when he was talking, you know, I was thinking of, you know, the words from that, you know, Manic Street Preacher song, if you tolerate this, then your children will be next.
Like, well, that's
if
exactly
if you tolerate
it.
This sort of behaviour, what Bill is saying, look, he says, I'm a regulator and a criminal investigator. I have done this in America. I know when things go bad, I know what to look for. He's saying your regulator was informed about this by a civil case in the law,
yeah,
taken by the customer. So the regulator was informed.
Totally missed it.
Not by their own investigation, but yeah, by the customer. You then have a civil case, which is in the court.
Yeah.
They're doing nothing. This is 7 years ago, 8 years ago. And what he's saying is that if this is the way you do business, if this is the way you want to investigate malfeasance, corporate malfeasance, as the Americans say, that's cool. That's cool if you want to do it this way.
Yeah.
However, if you tolerate this sort of behavior and if you put it under the carpet and if you say, oh, well, you know, there's a couple of rogues and there wasn't, he's saying, hold on. This is the top brass of the premier finance company in the country.
Yeah.
That not only is the finance company stockbroker, but actually has a government mandate.
Yeah.
A government mandate to be the primary broker in Irish gilts. Now, what that means is that they get the first, they basically sell gilts to the market on behalf of the Irish state.
Yeah. Yeah,
this is the biggest franchise you could ever get in finance.
And we often talk about this as well, and we've talked a lot about populism. So if you tolerate this, well then...
What else do you tolerate?
Well, that gives rise to... That's the very reason why populism is rising around the world, not just here. So this is an open goal for the likes of Sinn Féin to rock in. So on, yeah, you talk about the only way we can exercise our power is to vote. So the next election that comes around, Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael are out. People are sick of them. They are part of the elite.
Unless they decide in the next few days to say, hold on a second, there's something to see here. Because the obsession is, move along, there's nothing to see here. They might say, there is something to see here. If Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are the centrist parties, right?
Yeah.
Want to become meaningful to the voter who feels, hold on a second, these are the rich guys sewing the thing up again.
Yeah.
The West Lower.
Yeah.
They could act now. There's still time to act. You know, but it's
they
just
want to get the finger out because honestly, you know, they talk about the rise of populism and all these, you know, the far right.
And the far left as well, they talk about as well.
Yeah, yeah. And this just fuels that. I mean, it's just blatantly obvious.
No, you're absolutely right. But on and we'll come back. We'll talk to Bill again.
Like he's an outsider looking in at the way
the
Ireland
best,
works.
The best type. You need that.
Yeah.
You know, somebody who doesn't know anybody who's unencumbered by I went to school with your man or everyone is entitled to say, hold on a second. We're all on the outside.
Yeah.
Right? We're all on the outside. It's not like just a little bunch. We're all on the outside. And of course, they then respond to the party or the politician, whether it's in Italy, Britain, Ireland, America, Canada, that says, hold on a second, I'm going to sort that out. There is corruption at the top. It mightn't even be corruption in the classic sense of the word, but there is a way of doing business.
Yeah.
And that way of doing business penalizes the little guy.
Sometimes a vote is not enough, though. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, Jesus, John. You're the most inconspicuous looking, inoffensive radical I have ever seen. I can tell you something about sort of, I had a boss many years ago who worked for me. And do you remember in 1972 or 71, I think it was after Bloody Sunday?
Yeah.
The British Embassy was burnt down here.
Mm-hmm. Which my uncle threw the first petrol bomb. But anyway, there you go.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, that's very interesting. And how long did he spend in Lancash?
He's garbage.
Actually, my former boss, you know what he did? He says, I was at the thing. He was telling me when I was a kid. And he said, I was at that. And yeah. I said, what did you do, Tom? And he says, I threw a golf ball at it. It's called Economist as Radical.
Golf ball.
Isn't that great?
It could have been anything else but a fucking golf ball.
I love it. So that's what you get. You rent an economist. That's what we do. Anyway.
I threw the Financial Times at him.
And I said, don't you dare do that again, you British person. Anyway, you're absolutely right about populism and the need to be seen to do the right thing.
Yeah.
And if you don't do the right thing, people understandably say, let's vote for somebody else.
Yeah.
Other thing that interests me, though, about Davies is the fact that Davies is a classic rentier firm. It's a firm that doesn't do it like stockbrokers, banks, lawyers, accountants, economists, right?
Yeah, yeah.
These are professions that don't create anything. Yeah. That they just seek a rent, right? A fee from somebody else.
We had a great conversation with Mark Blythe about this as well a little while ago.
Exactly.
But this just sums it up, doesn't it?
Exactly. That these are the types of industries that do not produce anything, that actually are wealth extractors rather than wealth creators. Because industries that shuffle other people's money around, which is what they're doing, right?
Yeah.
They tend typically never to generate any income. Now, I've always felt this is the case, but I've recently read a paper. So I wasn't just watching Britney this week. Not just, right? I was reading an NBER, National Bureau of Economic Research paper, by a guy called Kevin Murphy. Guy called Kevin Murphy, must be one of us, member of the Irish diaspora, and economist in the University of Chicago.
Right.
And he did a detailed study about societies that value lawyers over societies that value engineers. What actually happens to the economy? Okay, it's a 1991 paper because they were trying to figure out in America why American productivity was falling, right? Thinking, look, what is happening in this country? Because we're educating lots of people, all the metrics look right, but productivity in the country is falling.
Yeah.
And he had a hunch, which was that bright people in the United States were going into sectors that were extracting rent and not going into sectors that were producing new innovative goods.
Well, is this because, you know, the likes of lawyers and doctors and all that kind of stuff, they pay well. So they're very attractive in that sense.
Well, not doctors, because they save lives, but lawyers and bankers. This is what he was thinking.
Okay,
he was thinking, okay, so many people went to Harvard and Yale and Columbia and all our best universities end up working on Wall Street or end up working in big, big law firms. Why? Because they pay best. And they give status. These are high status jobs, right? Yeah. And he was trying to figure out, could it be that our best used to go into engineering and used to make things and used to innovate? A bit like Collison last week, you know?
Sure.
Guys who actually try to figure out, how do we make the world better? How do we make products that are new and exciting? And this, I've always thought, that people who create something today that didn't exist yesterday.
Yeah.
That's the key to innovation, right? So these types of guys are the people and girls that drive the economy. This was his hunch, was maybe we're just educating people to do the wrong thing because these are high status jobs and the more rent you extract, the more money you have and the partners make a fortune. Yeah, yeah, yeah. They surveyed 91 countries. And in all of these countries, the countries that have more lawyers, he decided that lawyers was going to be his target, okay?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just because...
Well, fair enough.
It is fair enough, exactly. I'm married to a recovering lawyer. She's gone through the 12 steps already. She's still
a bit twitchy.
She's still a bit twitchy. But the point was that what they found over 91 countries, doing all the regressions and whatever, was that countries that have more lawyers relative to engineers grow slower. And countries that have more engineers relative to lawyers grow quicker. Why? Because the engineers tend to be in the technology sector. They tend to be innovative people. They're making, remember we talked about last week, the trial and error, tinkering around, making new things. And of course, when you come back to Ireland, right? And lots of Western European countries, the high status jobs are in the rentier sector.
Yeah.
It's called FIRE. It's an expression. It's for an economy. FIRE economies: finance, insurance, real estate.
Right, okay.
Everything associated with those industries are high status because they extract rent. Like think about, you know, an estate agent. What does it do? What does she do? Or he? They put up a few ads and say, we're going to take a fee for flogging a house. There's no wealth created in estate.
Nothing new there.
Nothing. You just sell. You just penalise the buyer and penalise the seller usually, right?
Well, I always remember my aunt used to say to me when I was going into sound engineering, when I was leaving school, she was like, would you ever get yourself a proper job?
Oh, she's
with a pension, like, you know.
You can imagine my mother, when I left the central bank, walked out the door. Oh, my Jesus. Pension, civil service, 9-to-5, the whole thing.
You had it all there.
You're 25, and I remember thinking to myself, I can't do this. But anyway.
You'd be bored out of your head at this stage.
Oh, man. But it is a fascinating thing, John, that societies that value rentier sectors, like us, and I suspect the Brits as well, as opposed to our friends, the Germans, who value engineering.
Right.
Our societies, if you look at the data, don't have the same economic dynamism because the clever people are going into sectors that they're attracted by the wage, but the wage is extracted by rent as opposed to being created by new innovations.
Yeah.
And it's an extraordinary thing. And so there's lots of ways to look at the Davies idea. But one thing is, Davies is the top of the rentier tree. It's actually the pinnacle of the rentier economy. And until we value the innovators and the creators, not the papal shufflers and the people who talk about other people's wealth, our economy will never achieve its full potential.
The future teaches you to be